about this.
These two
people.
I am geeking out.
To the Geeks Unleashed podcast.
Mark.
Jasmine.
What a nerd.
Nerd alert.
Unleashed.
Television.
What are you talking about?
Anything can be a podcast.
Video game.
Geek.
What is a geek?
Oh, hi, Mark.
The whole point is, of course, the plot is.
You guys have great conversation.
I am geeking out.
Unleashed.
Movies. People love movies.
All right, you guys, podcast time.
You're listening to the Geeks Unleashed podcast. Part of the BCP Bad Batch. We take our passions and our fandoms and we turn them into conversations with you.
Hello, welcome to Geeks Unleashed. This is episode 159. I'm Mark.
I'm Jasmine.
Each week on the Geeks Unleashed podcast, we catch up on our pop culture lives, as well as bring you a review of something adapted from the comic book or gaming world.
Yes, and before we get started, if you're watching on YouTube, thank you so much. We appreciate that. We'd also love it if you would like this video and subscribe to our channel. And if you're listening on your favorite podcast platform, we appreciate that as well. We'd also very much love it if you would leave us a five-star review on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser.
And we would also very much love it if you were to donate to our Ko-Fi. We would appreciate anything you would like to give us. So just to set the scene, each episode on the Geeks Unleashed podcast, we do something called Geek of the Week, and we thought that's something where Jasmine or myself did something on our own, and it was kind of our highlight. And then we jump into our adapted review, which is this week is X-Men First Class, following our theme of X related content. However, we will go first with Geek of the Week. Jasmine, do you want to go first?
Yes. So since this is our first foray into Michael Fassbender in the X-Men universe, I watched The Killer on Netflix, which was a Netflix original movie where he plays like an assassin. If it's any indication, I fell asleep during a movie that centers around an assassin. Like, I was shocked. I was like, This can't be that great of a, because I was like, oh, maybe I'll just start it over and like rewatch it. And then I was like, no, like if I fell asleep during the, and it was not like late. I think I started it at like 6:15 in the evening. So it was still fairly early in the day. And no, I totally fell asleep. So I have no idea if the movie was great or not. But I'm going to go with, it couldn't have been that good if an assassin film put me to sleep. So yeah. Yeah. It was weird though. Like, I don't know, like the choice of them doing the voiceover narration. That just didn't work for me. It felt a lot. Okay, so do you remember that Ben Affleck movie, The Accountant? Did you ever see that one?
So I've never seen it, but I know about it.
Yeah. Oh my God. Okay. The Accountant is so good. It's so good. And I think that this film was like inspired by The Accountant, but it was in no way as entertaining and as thrilling as The Accountant was. I think it tried too hard. So it's my Geek of the Week, but it's not like, oh, I love this, it's great, go watch it. Sorry.
It was an unusual Geek of the Week then. I went to the cinema and saw Civil War. So have you heard of Civil War, Kirsten Dunst movie?
Yes.
No, I went with my wife to see it, and in a way I wish I hadn't have done, because she hated it, absolutely hated it. Was I could tell 20 minutes in she wasn't enjoying it, and I actually did say, do you want to go? She's like, no. And then afterwards she was like, that was the worst 2 hours of my life, waste of time, blah blah blah. I'm on the other end. I really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was a really good movie. It's hard to say so much was right with this movie, because I appreciate the context, and I would imagine it might be different for people in America seeing their own country being torn apart and be war torn, might have different views on it. However, I have deliberately gone and listened to other people's reviews, and for instance, Pop Culture Happy Hour, they seem to really embrace it. So I'm hoping that Americans can see how well put together this is. Visually, it's amazing. And
trailers didn't do much for me though. Like, I've seen plenty of trailers.
The trailers are not the movie.
Okay.
So, and that was something that I noticed that other podcasters were chatting about. It is incredibly slow, to be honest, for quite a good chunk of time. I would say the last 20 minutes are quite heavy going, but this is a road trip movie, as weird as it sounds. Mm-hmm. So Kirsten Dunst and a couple of others are press, whether that's photographers or writers, etc. And then we do meet some other reporters as we're going on this journey. The movie starts about 70-75% of the way into a civil war. Now, you're not given overly much in the background of what's happened. However, whilst they do not say that this president is Donald Trump, it is so heavily implied that this president is Donald Trump.
Okay.
And no, I would just want to be clear, they do not say it's Donald Trump, but it feels Trump-ish. Like it could, yeah. And now they allude to some terrible decisions this president has made. Now, I don't know what could have led to him getting a third term, but that's something apparently that he had. He disbanded the FBI, he bombed American citizens, and that's led to some sort of team up. And they've said like Florida teamed up with another state, etc., and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it was an interesting journey, to be honest. And I did love the visuals. I thought the visuals were really cool. Like, so there's, say, for instance, in the middle of action, you know, people getting shot, etc. And there's two photographers. Kirsten Dunst plays the senior, more experienced one, and then they have like a junior newbie journalist who photographer. And suddenly, like in the middle of all this action, you're suddenly, it will freeze for a second and go black and white to show you the picture that they took, and then it will then carry on with the action, or and then you'll see some like horrific moments happening, and you know, when they play music over it instead, or you can't really hear what's going on. There's a scene, for instance, where I forget the name of the younger character, but the younger photographer ends up in this like hole of dead bodies. And yeah, where, you know, like where they chuck them in a hole and the plan is to bury them all in like mass grave. So she like falls into this mass grave and she's trying to scramble out, and it sort of goes, you can't hear what's going on. I can't remember if it's music or it just goes quiet, but like you can't hear what's going on as she's trying to get out. There's some real tension in there. And then there's also moments where they'll run into this little town, middle of nowhere America, where everything's normal. And like you can go into a shop and buy a dress or whatever. And they're like, you do know there's a war going on. They're like, we know, but just sort of choosing just to get on with our lives. And they do allude to, I think it's Kirsten Dunst says about her parents, they live on a farm or something. And she said that her parents are just carrying on as if this isn't happening. Mm-hmm. Which I think is just crazy. You can imagine war going on and people just choosing not to acknowledge what's going on. But yeah, I would say it's worth watching. It's like this crazy what if America decided to have a civil war right now. That's basically what it is. So
I'm good.
And that, you know, there's a few people, when I listen to their reviews, they reckon this could be one of those film of the year type things. So
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. With a storyline like that, I wouldn't be surprised.
Mm-hmm. So I would recommend watching it. I think it was well done. I can appreciate, especially with the political turmoil, that, to be honest, both our countries have got elections this year. Mm. And both of our countries have two people that nobody wants to vote for. So, we're similarly locked. But I'm not sure.
It's going to be an interesting November.
Yeah, well, I think we don't know when ours is going to be. They still haven't announced ours yet. So, but it has to be this year. So,
man, oh man.
I think Rishi's delaying the inevitable. So, right, we're going to jump into our main topic, which is X-Men First Class. Mm-hmm. So, directed by Matthew Vaughn, screenplay was by Ashley Edward Miller, Zach Stentz, I think. Stentz? I don't know. Jane Goldman and obviously Matthew Vaughn. And this movie is based on characters from Marvel Comics.
And it stars James McAvoy as Charles Xavier, Michael Fassbender as Magneto, Rose Byrne as Moira McTaggart, January Jones as Emma Frost, Oliver Platt as the Man in Black, Kevin Bacon as Sebastian Shaw, Zoe Kravitz as Angel Salvadori, Nicholas Holt as Hank slash the Beast, Lucas Till as Alex Summers slash Havoc.
I've completely forgot that Zoe Kravitz was in this, Catwoman. Herself. She becomes Catwoman, doesn't she? I preferred her as Catwoman over this, if I'm honest.
Well, I mean, she definitely had a much bigger role as Catwoman than she did as Angel.
I would say, if I'm honest, I love the name January Jones. It's such a cool name. Whoever, like, obviously her parents named her. I assume it's not a stage name.
I mean, it might be.
It could be a stage name. But anyway, whoever put that together, well done. Thumbs up. So, right, okay. Various people show up in this movie, and yes, we always shout out the first appearances. Beast, Magneto, Xavier made their first appearance in the X-Men issue 1, which came out in September 1963 from Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Mystique made her first appearance in Miss Marvel issue 16. That was in April 1978 by Dave Cockrum and Chris Claremont. And so I love how when we've done this, Chris Claremont seems to be everywhere. Like, you know, Rogue isn't in this movie, but her first appearance was in an Avengers annual and Chris Claremont wrote it. So even when he wasn't writing X-Men, he was creating like amazing. Yeah. No, but he was like X-Men characters that have stood the test of time.
Yeah.
He was off creating them in other books. So right, Sebastian Shaw was first appearance was in Uncanny X-Men 129,
which we read.
I know, which we've read
episode,
which was in January 1980 by Chris Claremont and John Byrne. Emma Frost, she also is in this movie, but she made her first appearance in also something we read from last week, the Dark Phoenix saga, and she made her first appearance in also Uncanny X-Men 129. Moira McTaggart, again, created by Chris Claremont and Dave Cockrum, made her first appearance in Uncanny X-Men 96, which was in December 1975. There's loads of other characters in this movie, but I just thought I'd shout out some of the sort of the key ones there. Right, we had a running time of 132 minutes, and the release date of this movie in the United Kingdom was January 1st, 2011, and in the United States was June 3rd. The budget for this movie was around $150 million, and it made at the box office $353.
I don't remember this movie being that popular. I guess I just missed the mark on that one.
No, I remember it. I remember it being well received.
I can't remember if I saw this in theaters or not.
I don't remember either. And I've got this really weird feeling that I didn't.
I don't think I did either. I've seen it, and I've seen it multiple times before we did this episode, but like, I don't remember watching this movie in theaters either at all.
I can't recall, and I'm leaning towards that I didn't.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting.
And I think if I didn't watch it, knowing my mindset, if I didn't watch it in theaters, it's probably because I was a bit like, oh, why are they doing this again? Like,
yeah,
why are they
from X3. Yes, I would agree with that.
I would have just been happy with an X4. Like, just carry it on and just repair what damage you did and just do an X4. That's probably the mindset I had, a bit like Amazing Spider-Man when Andrew Garfield came in. I did actually watch that at the cinema, but I watched it in like the last week that it was in the cinema. Like it was on like week 7 or something, and I knew it was about to end. I remember looking at the show times and saw there was like 2 showings that week, and I was like, yeah, I better go now. Because I was peed off then that they had got rid of Tobey Maguire.
Yeah,
I was so annoyed. I can imagine I was had the same mindset. I was just like, why have you got rid of them all and just done this whole first class thing? I am aware first class, there was a graphic novel, X-Men First Class. But anyway, you're going to jump in some fun facts.
Yes, some fun facts. So a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about X3, We went through the 50 bajillion directors that were on slate to direct that film and then never did. So this director, Matthew Vaughn, who you may recognize from the Kingsman franchise and Kick-Ass, he directed this film, and he was also the first person that was supposed to be directing X3. He pulled out because of some shady tactics that they used to get Halle Berry to come on to X3, but also because he didn't feel like he could make a film in the timeline that they wanted him to do it. Well, turns out that this film had an even shorter turnaround time than X3. But I feel like because this movie was a restart and not a conclusion to a trilogy, mm-hmm. that maybe he felt like the time frame wasn't as big of an issue for a film like this versus like trying to wrap up a trilogy. I don't know. Anyway, so he came back and he did this one. They did approach Bryan Singer to direct this film, but Bryan Singer was busy doing something else. So he came on as a producer, but he left the directing to someone else. So Matthew Vaughn took the helm this time. So casting, there were some super interesting casting choices that I'm really glad did not happen. And at the very top of that list is Taylor Lautner from Twilight. Jacob was up for the role of Hank McCoy. And I just can't even imagine Jacob as Hank McCoy. Like, there's no, like,
you can imagine about that. You can imagine back then, though, it was pretty much, I think Twilight was going on around then. Yeah.
Like they just wanted the name recognition, but there's nothing inside of me that believes he would have been able to pull off intelligent doctor that designs jets. No offense.
He would have walked around with his top off a lot, I would imagine.
So I'm very glad we didn't get that choice. As far as Sebastian Shaw, so Matthew Vaughn really wanted Colin Firth to play Sebastian Shaw because Matthew Vaughn said he really wanted to see Colin Firth play a villain. But the studio was like, nah, you already got too many damn British people in this movie. And so they were like, no more Brits. That's it. You're done. You can't hire any more British people. And so instead, Matthew Vaughn put Colin Firth in Kingsman. Now, this one, I think, would have been a really, really good choice. Rosamund Pike was actually in talks to play Emma Frost. And I think she would have been a really good Emma Frost because she always plays icy characters really well. Like, I think she would have been a really great Emma Frost. Alice Eve, who you may recognize from, what was it?
Star Trek. Yeah.
She was actually cast as Emma Frost, but they never quite got the numbers right. And so she was like, peace out. I'm not doing it. And so she left. And after she left the role, that's when it finally went to January Jones. Amber Heard was also in talks to play Mystique before that went to Jennifer Lawrence. I don't know about that one. And then the last little bit that I have, Lucas Till, who played Havoc, actually auditioned and was cast for the role of Beast, but when he found out how long it would take to put on the makeup once Beast went into like fur mode, he was like, absolutely not, I'm not doing this. And so they cast him as Havoc instead, and then Nicholas Holt got the role.
That was a bit foolish for him because I'm pretty sure Havoc isn't in the next three, or if he is, he's not in all four of them. Definitely, I can't remember, but I'm sure he's not in all four of them.
So. Yeah, but like also, dude, Beast you're not is. Big enough. You're not a big enough name to be like, ew, that's too much work, like, bro. But I can't see him playing Hank though. Like, I think Nicholas was a really good choice for a young Hank. And Nicholas said that he spent a lot of time rewatching Kelsey Grammer as Beast and like based a lot of his mannerisms on Kelsey Grammer's version of Beast. And Fassbender cool. did the same thing. He said he watched a lot of Ian McKellen as Magneto. And he read a lot of the comics as background to kind of get him into the, because Fassbender was like, everybody knows the character because of Ian McKellen, even though the comics back it all up. But like, he's like, so I wanted to honor the source material, like source material, meaning Ian McKellen, but add my own spin to it. So I thought they both did great jobs, him and Nicholas Holt. So that's all I got.
That's great. And I think Nicholas Holt did really well as Beast. And the first time I ever came into anything that he was in was Skins. So I don't know if you know what Skins is.
No, for me, it was about a boy when he was like 8 years old. Love that movie. Him and Hugh Grant.
So Skins is was a Channel 4 TV series. I think it went on for 7 seasons. And every 2 seasons, they would change the cast. So for seasons 1, 2, Nicholas Holt was in it, and 3 and 4 was a different cast. And then 5 and 6 was a different cast. And then season 7, they went back and revisited some of the older characters from the first 2 generations of Skins. Mm-hmm. Skins covered the ages of 16 to 18 at college in the United Kingdom, in Bristol, actually. So, but no, I used to love that series, and that was the first time I ever came across Nicholas Holt. So it was quite weird for me. And anyway, what you just said about modeling themselves off of the X-Men trilogy. So I think this movie was kind of going to be its own thing, and then the next movie retconned that and joined the 2 franchises together. Although the next 2 films after that kind of then went and did their own thing again anyways. There was definitely linkages between First Class and Days of Future Past with the trilogy.
Yeah. So,
anyway, the IMDb summary for this movie: in the 1960s, superpowered humans Charles Xavier and Eric Lyncher work together to find others like them, but Eric's vengeful pursuit of an ambitious mutant who ruined his life causes a schism to divide them.
It's a very dramatic summary there, IMDb. we've gone from super vague to just dramatic.
Right, okay. So in regards to our knowledge on all things X-Men, go back and listen to previous episodes. Mm-hmm. We covered the Dark Phoenix Saga graphic novel last week.
Yep.
And then the 3 previous episodes, we covered the Fox X-Men saga. And then the week before that, we covered the Generation X TV pilot movie that didn't lead to...
We've already got a lot of X under our belt, man.
So, yeah. It's actually weird to think how long ago that was, Generation X, now.
I know.
That we reviewed that already. And we've still got a lot of X content.
We got a long way to go.
So, right. Okay. You said already, have you seen this movie before? I don't think I've rewatched it that many times. This might be my 2nd or 3rd time.
I think this is probably like 4 or 5 for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I didn't see it in the theaters. So.
Yeah, no, I don't. But also, like, I think it was one of those movies where, like, I would watch it if I caught it on TV already. Like, because rewatching it yesterday, like, I did not remember at all the entire sequence with Shaw and Eric when Eric was a kid and Shaw killing his mother.
Mm-hmm.
None of that was familiar to me whatsoever. Like, I was just like, how did I miss this before? So that's why I'm thinking, like, I never saw this in theaters. I had to have just, like, watched this when it was on TV.
Yeah, there was a lot in here I didn't remember. Don't get me wrong, there was pieces I did remember. I remember Charles Xavier at the end on the beach losing the ability to walk and stuff. And but there was things that would go, as it was going through, I was like, oh, I don't remember that. So... Right, okay, so this movie is set predominantly in 1962 during the Cuban Missile Crisis. It's safe to say that neither of us were alive back then.
Not unless we got some powers like Mystique or something where we can, or Wolverine, where aging is very slow. No.
However, the movie does begin, like you just said, during World War II, and the scene is pretty much a mirror for how the Fox trilogy X-Men movies started. Yeah. However, we do get to see a little bit more of what happened to Magneto after he ripped that gate open. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was pretty cool. Anyway, what's your overall thoughts on this movie?
I really enjoy this movie. Mm-hmm. I think it's done well. I think it's cast well. We were mm-hmm. talking about casting earlier in the fun facts, but I think the people that they ended up choosing, I think were really good fits. Everybody seems to mesh well together. I love the way that Fassbender and McAvoy were able to capture the same kind of chemistry that Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart had. I thought that Magneto and Charles played very well off of each other, mm-hmm. even in this film. So I enjoyed the cast. I liked how the new students were so green, and we get to see how inexperienced they are when it comes to actual trouble. So I loved the development. I liked the interweaving of real life events with mutants thrown in there. I really enjoyed this movie. I like that Charles is a bit of a playboy, which is so different from any version of Charles we've ever gotten before. So it's really kind of fun to go back and see where it all started. It was pretty well done to me. Also, now that I am more familiar with Matthew Vaughn, back in 2011, I hadn't seen Kick-Ass yet. And so back then I didn't know him because Kingsman hadn't come out yet. And so it was just kind of, now this film feels very Matthew Vaughn-esque. It definitely feels like it has his signature all over it.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But no, overall, I really enjoyed it.
Do you know, when I rewatched this, I rewatched it earlier today before our review. And I was thinking, I really enjoy this film. And I'm kind of almost disappointed to myself that I haven't rewatched it more. Because if I really love it, I'll rewatch these films. And mm-hmm. I definitely haven't. My wife reckons I saw this film last time about 4 or 5 years ago. And I can't recall, but. I'm pretty sure I hadn't, but anyway, because I know she did a whole watch of all the X-Men films during COVID, because mm-hmm. she'd never seen them, any of them. I know. Obviously, she's not as geeky as myself or yourself. I think this could be my second or third time, but rewatching it today, I was like, this is a really good movie. It's really well cast, really well written, just really well put together in general. And you could feel maybe that there was links to the trilogy, if you squeeze hard enough, it kind of fits. It kind of fits.
Close your eyes and squint.
Yeah, the opening scene is pretty much scene by scene from the original X-Men movie.
Yeah, I mean they had to refilm it because the actors are different, I don't know why they couldn't have just reused the footage, but
I think they should have reused the footage.
But I guess they had to get a new kid.
maybe. I mean, can they not do? They did the de-aging in The Last Stand. They could have just done some de-aging. So, I honestly thought this was such a good film. Really good cast. I loved the origin of how we got Xavier and Magneto to mm-hmm. have that friendship, and seeing Magneto and Xavier kind of build in that first X-Men team was really cool. I loved that the villain, whilst Magneto was a villain towards the end, it was Sebastian Shaw who was the main villain, as well as a bunch of others, including Emma Frost. I thought that was really cool, considering the last three movies, it was Magneto. I know, Stryker was in the second film, but it was still Magneto. And then
Stryker was in this one.
Yeah. There's a little Stryker.
Yeah,
a little Stryker cameo in there as well. Anyway, I just thought, it was a really good movie. I really enjoyed all of it. There was nothing in there, if I'm honest, I had overly a problem with. And I thought it was good. I mean, I guess I could get a little bit critical that, in the comics, Xavier's first team was actually none of these kids that were in it.
But this isn't a team. This is a class.
Yeah.
Of students.
Now, it did have a big cast, and I love the interactions, especially with all of the kids. One of my favorite moments is where they're all hanging out in that room, and they end up smashing the window and breaking a statue.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. I thought that was pretty cool.
Because that's exactly what kids would do. Like, kids that had these kinds of powers, and you get them all together. I love it.
So I kind of just thought, normally I throw like who's your favorite character, but also what was your favorite power? Because there was a lot of variety in here.
Favorite power.
Yeah, so like for instance, Darwin is pretty cool. Like his power set was pretty cool. The ability to essentially evolve and adapt to every situation. I thought that was pretty cool. But yeah, first of all, what was your favorite power that they had?
Favorite power.
In this movie, yeah.
I mean, it's really hard to not say Mystique, right? Like,
yeah.
How flipping cool would that be? Like, you could literally be anyone.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from that, honestly, I liked Havoc's power. Like, I thought that just like raw firepower was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very similar to his brother's.
Yeah.
So I thought that was cool.
Supposed to be Scott's younger brother, but this timeline makes it seem like he would definitely be the older brother.
I don't know. I guess we'll find out in the second movie. I can't recall, if I'm honest. I don't know if you knew this, by the way, that they have a third brother.
Yes.
Vulcan.
Yes. He's a baddie.
Yeah, he's a baddie, yeah. Oh, okay. I didn't know you'd know that. So, all right. Okay,
I learned it when I was researching fun facts.
Right, okay. So who was your favorite character?
Magneto. I think this is now the third film where Magneto has been my favorite character. Listen, I say it. I love to root for the villain. I really do. And Magneto is just one of the best comic book villains that has been brought to the screen. And the way Fassbender plays it, like the entire revenge arc at the beginning of the film where he goes to France, where he goes to Argentina, like loved it. And that entire sequence in the bar in Argentina, I was just like, I could watch this on repeat. Like, yes, some dude just like finally taking his revenge on Nazis. I'm all in. Like, let's do this. So I just love Magneto, and I love the way that he plays like a younger version of Magneto, because you can see you can see how we got Ian McKellen based on like this version, right? Like it's all there. But also like to watch him struggle to get a grip on his power, like when he tells Charles like, I can only do really big stuff when I'm mad, and Charles is like, no dude, you need to be able to like call upon it at any point. It's not just when you're upset. And so like actually seeing him grow into his power was pretty cool. And just like the emotion and the relationship that he has with Charles, I just love that dynamic, because and you see it in X-Men The Last Stand as well, when Charles dies and Magneto stops another guy from talking shit about Charles, and he's like, look, I'm not gonna have that. Like, my only regret in this whole process is that Charles did not survive long enough to see our end, the ending that we wanted. So I love that we got to see the origin of their friendship. And even like they turn into rivals, but they're still like friendly.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that kind of dichotomy is so rare. Like, I don't know.
Xavier's laying on the beach and he's incredibly protective, but right. Xavier's honest with him. He's like, no, you did this. However, he's still like looking out for him. And I thought the one of the moments between the two of them I thought was really cool was in the at the mansion, when the both of them are together trying to train all the other mutants. However, Xavier's also training Magneto, and like you just said a minute ago about, no, you have to be able to call on this power. And when he starts showing him how to do that, and he tweaks something in his mind, he goes, let me help you a little bit. And I was like, wow, Xavier, I bet you wish you hadn't have done that later on. So to be honest, the power set I thought was cool was Emma Frost, if I'm honest.
Okay, that's fair.
Being a telepath, but also being able to change into Diamond, and being, and so that protected her from Xavier putting her, those, that field up around her. But that, that, that sort of crystal self, whilst I know Magneto did damage that, was pretty strong as well, and gave her the ability to get into some physical action too. So
yeah,
I don't know if you knew this, but Emma Frost, initially her abilities were only the telepath abilities. It was only during Grant Morrison's run on the new X-Men that he developed something called secondary mutations, and Emma Frost's crystal thing was a secondary mutation, which came later. They gave some mutants secondary mutations, which I thought was cool. So so it was something that came later on, a secondary mutation. And but obviously in this movie she just had it from the go. So but yeah, I thought her abilities were the coolest, if I'm honest. In terms of favorite characters, I thought Kevin Bacon as Sebastian Shaw was really cool. Seeing Kevin Bacon playing a really dark character, that, and we talked about Origins, what he did actually created Magneto. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if he was the kind of person who actually would care that he created such a bad guy.
No.
So he sort of really embraced it. And as Magneto said at the end, there's not a single thing you said I disagree with.
Right.
But you killed my mother.
Exactly.
So
that felt very much like Iron Man fighting with Bucky in Civil War.
You killed my mother, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, nothing else matters. You kill my mom. So, I mean, I would feel the same way. Like, I'm not gonna lie. You could be right about everything else, but you killed my mom, you have to die. Like,
I thought Kevin Bacon really played a bad guy well. Honestly, he was menacing.
He had like that cocky coolness about him, right? Yeah. Like, he never got flustered or anything.
Hmm. And I thought, to be honest, his power set was pretty cool. And the way his hands would shift around sort of balls of fire and things like that. And
his power set was scary. Like, for real villainy.
I know I shout out Emma Frost, but the other cool power, the secondary one I want to shout out, is Darwin's.
Oh, yeah, he's cool.
I think it's a shame he didn't last much longer. However, if you can go underwater and develop gills, or suddenly you need to become rock hard strong, that is a cool power to have.
Yeah.
So I think, I don't know what I'd want to have if I was to choose, but his would be one of them, I think.
If I wasn't going with Mystique, it would have to be Xavier or like Emma Frost and the telepathy. Like,
yeah, I think I would want the telepathy. Cool. The telepathy would be cool. Like when Xavier goes, do you want me to show you my third magic trick? And he just tells the guy to get in the car.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, it's, you know, it can read your mind, you can move stuff, whatever, but actually I can also tell you what to do. So. Mm-hmm. Right, okay. So the structure of this movie, it starts in the World War II, and then it jumps forward to the 60s. Jumps forward initially to the 50s, doesn't it? Because you get to see Xavier as a child and Mystique as a child before then we get to see them as adults in the 60s. What do you think? What do you think of the overall structure of the movie?
I like it. I think it works really well. I think them starting in the same spot as X2 or the first X-Men film, I think is poignant. Like it really set the tone again, grounding you in the real world before we get into the superhero stuff, right? So I love the setup at the beginning. I love that we work our way into these characters. Like at this point, everybody is familiar with all of the characters, well, with the main three characters, with Mystique, Magneto, and Xavier. Like we're familiar with them up to this point. So getting to see how they got to the point where we became familiar with them, I thought that they did a really great job of telling that story. So it was nice to go back in time and see those things and to see the juxtaposition of, like, because it starts out in the 40s, World War II, at a concentration camp. And then we go to the 40s in Westchester, New York, with Charles living in this big freaking mansion, finding another mutant in his kitchen and being like, have whatever you want. You don't have to steal any food anymore. Like, just the dynamic of Eric suffering and then Charles's like very posh life. And then we get to Oxford and in college, and Charles is in college and enjoying himself. And then Mystique is like waitressing, I'm guessing she mentioned that, but like, I love it. I love that we get to see them grow into the people that we are already familiar with, mm-hmm. because it's proof that like, even if you know how the story ends, like it's more fun to learn how we got there than to just know the ending. Right. Cause like, we know how the story ends. And so like to see how they came to be these characters that we fell in love with 10 years beforehand, I thought was really cool. And I thought that the way that they told it was really well, it was paced well. We've got events happening all over the place. Sebastian Shaw keeps you on your toes. He's that kind of like villain where he does the despicable things and he does them so well that it's really, A, it's easy to root for him if you're rooting for the villain, but also B, it's like so satisfying when he gets his comeuppance, like at the end of the film. So I thought that it's just well balanced. I would say that this, the way that they did the structure is very well balanced to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. I enjoyed the slowness parts and the fun parts, like the training, as well as the heavy action and, mm-hmm. you know, submarines getting ripped out of the water. Mm-hmm. I felt that we deserved that payoff at the end.
Yes. And I know character. Charles didn't want it, but I sure did.
I don't know. I loved all the little moments as well. Just like the kids in the kitchen, you know, Mystique meeting Charles Xavier. I really enjoyed how we got to see how these people all met and found their relationship with each other. Because Mystique and Magneto are villains together in the trilogy. So to see that relationship come about, mm-hmm. I even love the fact that the helmet got an origin story, that it was actually Sebastian Shaw's helmet. And then he said where he got it from, and then Magneto gets it. So I don't know. I can't really fault the movie. I think it was really well done, really well put together. And whilst I don't think it was naturally linked to the original, it was cool to hear that the cast also went off and did their own research to try and link it to that trilogy.
Yeah.
So I feel when it ends, it is a natural link, because also we had, and I thought this was a cool moment where Jennifer's version of Mystique shapeshifts into the Mystique of the trilogy for a brief second.
Yeah.
And I love that when Eric and Charles are recruiting loads of mutants, they walk into a bar and Hugh Jackman's Wolverine is sitting there smoking, and they get out their names, but that's about it before he tells them to F off.
Yes.
And I remember watching that absolutely like roaring with laughter the first time I saw that. I thought that was really, really funny. And I thought, I wonder how much Hugh Jackman got paid for that one hour of work.
Yeah. So, for two words.
I'm sure he got paid a nice sum of money.
Oh, definitely.
He's like, you're not going to probably get me back, and I'm not going to, you know, pay me for, you know, £1,000 a day or whatever.
Yeah.
So, it must have been 10 or 20 grand.
Because they'd have to pay all of his fees to get him there. They'd have to get him to wherever they're filming. They got to fly you there. They got to put you in the hotel. They got to pay for your transportation. They got to pay for your
podium. I reckon at least 100 grand all in.
Yeah, at least.
Mm-hmm.
On 15 seconds.
I think it was just really well put together. I think getting the little flashbacks at the beginning from the World War II scene to the kitchen, to then getting some cool moments as Charles Xavier as a heartthrob on campus, and even seeing the background with Moira MacTaggert's character and how she meets Xavier, all of it was just so well put together, and it just felt natural, the origin. It wasn't forced. It wasn't There was no bad planning that I could see. So I think they did a really good job in this movie. And yeah. I think, like you said, we know the ending. We know that Xavier and Magneto end up on opposite sides of the line. Mm-hmm. So seeing how that came about in this movie, if we were to believe this is what happened before the trilogy that we watched, mm-hmm. I think they all did a really good job.
Yeah, definitely.
Did you
have any favorite... we keep calling them kids, but they're like in their early 20s.
I know. Did you have any favorite moments from this movie?
Yeah, quite a few. So I mentioned it earlier, but the scene in Argentina, that's one of my mm-hmm. favorites. The end when Magneto was like, I'm gonna count to three and I'm gonna make this coin move.
That was pretty dark, man.
That was so good because you could see like it was tearing him up on the inside. Like he had tears in his eyes as he was doing it. But like again, it was just so satisfying because like you waited the entire movie for him to be able to be the one to get Sebastian Shaw. Mm-hmm. So that was such a good payoff. And I like the sequence of them just kind of going all over the place and picking up mutants. That was really fun.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. I loved seeing how they worked together. I thought it was really good. So, yeah. And if I'm going to be honest, we throw this question out. There's nothing I would have cut or changed about this movie. I think they did a pretty good job.
I mean, there's a couple of like throwaway lines about like at the end, they're like, oh, this is why women shouldn't be in the CIA and stupid shit like that.
Okay.
But
yeah.
Those, I mean, if you're going by something that was supposed to have taken place in the 60s. I can't imagine that those are definitely conversations that they would be having out loud about women in the 60s.
I mean, I can understand what you're saying. This obviously was written in the 70s, so I'm assuming they were writing it as, sorry, at the 60s, writing it as it was the 60s. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure if it was in 2024, they wouldn't have put those lines in there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, right, okay. I looked up. I've started the last few episodes. I've been looking up comparables of this movie.
Okay.
In 2011, other superhero movies were Captain America: The First Avenger, Green Lantern, Thor, and The Green Hornet. So I'm not sure if I've seen The Green Hornet. However, I've seen all the others.
Green Hornet was terrible. Not as bad as Green Lantern, which was just awful. Thor, not so great. And actually, I did not see Captain America the First Avenger until after I had already seen Captain America Winter Soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was very confused when he was like, Bucky? And I was like, who's Bucky?
I saw the First Avenger. I saw it in theaters. I think I saw Thor in theaters. Green Lantern, I'm pretty sure I saw that in theaters.
I unfortunately did see Green Lantern in theaters. It was
Green Hornet, I don't recall ever watching
not
it.
Not that great.
The weird thing is about the Green Lantern movie, it wasn't great, but it was so similar to storylines we'd seen recently by Geoff Johns in the comics in Green Lantern. Because I remember at that point in time when it came out.
It had legs. It just, Ryan Reynolds never should have been Hal Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
Hal Jordan doesn't have the Ryan Reynolds personality. That's a problem.
No.
And just...
So I think of the 2011 movies, I'm going to put this out there, that First Class is the best of all of them.
But it definitely got overshadowed. Like, because, well, not the Green Hornet, but definitely Captain America, Green Lantern, and Thor were all much more popular than this movie was. But I think that this was definitely the better of all of those films.
Okay, so also during 2011, other movies of note... Now, I haven't seen all of these, but I just thought I'd shout them out. The Adventures of Tintin, The Secret of the Unicorn. I have seen that.
Of course you
did. I think that's a brilliant movie. The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. So everybody's favorite James Bond. Well, actually, I don't know if everybody's, but he's Daniel Craig. The Help. Also Tinker Tailor. Soldier Spy. Drive. The Tree of Life. These are all sort of movies of note of that time. When I look through the list, if I'm on it, like there's a list somewhere of typing in 2011 favorite movies, etc. There's a lot that came out that year I hadn't seen, if I'm honest. I don't know what I was doing that year. I was clearly very busy. I have seen Drive. I have seen Tintin. And the rest of those movies I haven't seen.
Oh, man. The Help, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy was very good. I've heard that. Really good.
Yeah. No. I want to see. There's a lot on there that I'd like to see, including the Girl and the Dragon Tattoo.
I've not seen the originals. Like, I saw the ones that they redid with Mora. Not the one that had a... Oh, gosh, what's her name? Oh, I can't remember her name. But there was, like, an original, like... What is it? Swedish?
Oh, yeah. I know what you mean. I do know there's an original sort of TV. Yeah, so
I have not seen the originals. I saw the ones with Daniel Craig.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so to come back to First Class, the reason we're here, any last thoughts on the movie?
No, I loved it. I loved it. Like, I would, if I could go to any X-Men, like, film, like, and be, like, part of that timeline, this is the one I would go to. Like, when everybody is still young before they get to the first film. Like, I would want to go back and meet these characters.
Mm-hmm. It's just like you say, I want to give just my last final words on it. I thought this is a really well done movie, really good movie. I felt that it linked quite well with the Fox movies, and I have seen all of the others. Now, Days of Future Past is very different, but beyond that, the tone of the two movies that follow Future Past, I wish this movie had been replicated in those other movies. This movie, whilst action-packed, had a very different tone about it. Almost grounded.
Yeah. I think this one is actually an origin story. I think that's why it feels that way.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So what would you rate this movie out of 5?
4.5.
Yeah, do you know what? I'll go and go 4.5 as well.
Yay!
So, right, we're going to bring this episode to a close. And I think we both said we both love the movie. Nothing really, anything wrong with it. Maybe the odd line that doesn't weigh up in today's world, but there we go. Next episode, we are going to be reviewing, shocker, X-Men Days of Future Past. You can follow us on social media everywhere, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.
Yes, and you can get this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Google, Podbean, Apple, Spotify, we are everywhere. So please leave us a 5-star review and tell your geeky friends.
And see you next week.
Yep, good journey.